You're listening to episode 1 of the Mad Chatters podcast, October 1st, 2014.
Most everyone's mad here.
Welcome to the very first, the premiere, the inaugural, you might say, episode of the Mad Chatters podcast, your very important date with the happenings at Walt Disney World and around the Disney universe. My name is Derek. I'm here with my fellow host, Matthew.
Hello.
Say hey. And Jeremy.
Howdy.
Hey. And we have been Disney fans for a long time, and we've been talking about doing this for a long time, and here we are. So how's it feel, guys?
Terrific.
Yeah.
Terrifying.
I can see it in your face. You're terrified. But anyway, since it's our first podcast, I'm going to put you guys on the spot. I didn't tell you I was going to do this, but I just figure we should at least let people know that we have been to, we've been, what, three times as a trio? And then, of course, numerous other times, like on our own or with other people. So I feel like we should kind of say what it is that keeps us going back. You don't have to name everything because there's a lot, but maybe like a few specific things that stand out that you love, some of your favorite things.
Well, I'll go first. I've been going to Disney World since I was 4 years old. And so.
You win. You win.
I win? Oh, yeah. In 1989. Yeah, that was my first trip. And probably have gone at least once or twice every year since then. Maybe I've missed one or two here and there. Wow. So for me, it's. There's a lot of nostalgia and a lot of memories wrapped up in the places and the smells and the food and everything. So that factors a lot into why I continue to go back. But again, yeah. I love all things Disney, Walt Disney, the storyteller, and that comes through in the parks. And that's probably my favorite part of it all.
Yeah, yeah.
My first trip was in 2007. I was just 14, so that makes me 23 now. And no, yes, just
that's like
you can edit that out.
We got some fun math.
But for me, even though I didn't grow up going to the parks since I was four, like some people who are uppity, it still has a lot of
just
Disney. It still has a lot of Disney nostalgia for me because obviously, like most kids, I grew up with the Disney movies and the Disney Afternoon and the Disney Channel. And so I love it because it takes me back to a place before the world was hard and before life was hard. And it's just a place of you can just relax and forget about your problems and your cares. And that's why I love it.
Yeah. No, those are great answers. I was thinking more specifically, like, I love all the food at the resorts. I'm definitely with the nostalgia thing of walking down the street, even though I haven't been there, but like the Disney movies as a child, walking down the street and something I dreamed of for years and finally being able to see it and realize it's as wonderful as I thought it would be.
We're a lot deeper than you thought we would be.
I guess so, yeah. Thanks for the surprise there. Anyway, on today's show, we're going to be talking about two classic attractions that have already or will be seeing their final days coming up, and that is Maelstrom. Well, okay, let's get this out of the way. Is it Maelstrom or Maelstrom? Help me out, Matthew.
I think it's like Maelstrom. I don't know. We're going to find out real quick.
That wasn't one of the options. I'm sorry. Maelstrom?
It's Scandinavian. Who knows?
Okay.
I say Maelstrom, but that could be wrong. I say a lot of things wrong.
Anyway, that attraction is closing October 5th, and the studio backlot tour in Disney's Hollywood Studios closed Saturday, September 27th, which has already come and gone. So it's gone. Sorry.
So YouTube just settled it for me. It is Maelstrom.
Okay. Well, there you go. Yep. Maelstrom.
Maelstrom.
That sounds weird. I guess I don't really know how to say it anymore. So that's kind of sad. But anyway, so we're going to be talking.
Okay. You never will say it again.
Yeah. So that's what we're going to be talking about later. And we're going to be talking about what those closings kind of mean for those respective parks and whether we think it's a good idea, a bad idea, moving in the right direction, what. But first, we're going to do a little eating around the world. Jeremy and Matt, you guys both visited the Rose and Crown Pub and Dining Room a couple weeks ago, maybe, as you were saying goodbye to Maelstrom.
Yesterday.
Oh, okay. So why don't we talk about that?
That's incorrect. You can edit that out. It was like almost 2 weeks ago.
No, I want to keep all of your errors in and then edit all of my own errors. So
I'm usually inerrant, but then...
That's true. So why don't you guys talk about that a little bit, what you liked, didn't like, where it is, views, things like that. Jeremy, you go first.
Well, all right. Matt called me a couple... Well, when we were agreed to get together to about... let me try that again. Matt called me and wanted to do dinner a couple weeks ago because we were going to be at Epcot. And I can't remember, where did you say originally, Matt, we were going to try and get a reservation for?
Via Napoli,
which is a place I like. Mm-hmm. And we couldn't get in there for whatever reason, or they didn't have a reservation. But then we went to Rose and Crown. I didn't tell Matt this, but I really wasn't like too excited to go because I've only been to Rose and Crown one other time. It was back in 2009. My brother and some friends came down, and we did a little trip, and we ate there in 2009. And it was not a good experience at all. I did not enjoy it. And I was thinking about why I didn't enjoy it.
Food, service? I think you were about to answer that.
Yeah, both of those. The first was the food. It just wasn't anything to write home about. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't good. Except we got this appetizer dish that... Apparently, the menu's changed in the last couple of years, I saw online. So this is no longer offered, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
Because it was like cheese and meat and some kind of appetizer thing. And I just remember my brother taking a bite of something, whether it was the cheese or the meat. And he said, "That tastes how a farm smells." Mm. And so I took a bite, and it really did. It was
good cheese. That would make a good cheese.
Well, yeah.
But I digress. Go ahead.
I did not enjoy it. And then also I think what ruined our experience was we were sitting right next to the pub. If you're unfamiliar with the Rose and Crown, there's a pub inside and it's like a bar and kind of things. And there's just like a little divider between the dining room and the bar. And it's open air. It's just like a little swinging door. And so it was just really loud and ruckus and you just couldn't have a nice, relaxing meal. And so those two things I really... bothered me.
To be fair, it is a pub, right?
It is, but...
Mm-hmm. And a dining room.
Yeah. But sitting right... Yes, it is a dining room still. And
it's like when they offer you to sit in the bar at Outback, you say no.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And not to mention, like, again, I'm all about people having a good time and being loud and enjoying themselves, but when you're trying to have dinner conversation and you can't even hear the person sitting next to you because they were singing along to the piano so loudly... That, you know, ruined the experience. So, anyways, I wasn't too hot to go. But this time, I enjoyed it a little more.
Okay. Now, to clarify, Rose and Pub is the table service restaurant. Rose and Crown is
the Rose and Pub.
Is the table service restaurant in United Kingdom, right? In World Showcase. But I guess, based on your experience, I guess reservations aren't necessary?
I made reservations the day before, but we were going like on a Thursday in mid-September, so...
Okay. But I would
not exactly peak time.
Yeah, I would guess of all the table service restaurants, though, it's one of the least popular in World Showcase.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Not at the time we went, but we'll talk about that later,
I think it's a very popular restaurant, and I can think of other restaurants I think that... Or less popular. I think it's popular because even though it's British food, it still is familiar food.
Yeah.
Where if you get to like Morocco and things like that, it can be a little more risky.
Well, it depends on if the belly dancers
are
out.
I was going to say, Morocco of all places is a little risque. Okay, well, speaking of food, what did you guys order and why was it good? Why was it better?
This was my first time at the Rose and Crown, and I give it, let's see. Out of 10, I rate it like a 6.5. So it was pretty high, but not anything really good about the restaurant. So I ordered the bangers and mash. And it's a traditional English dish that is just simply English sausages served over mashed potatoes and some kind of gravy. And, of course, they doll it up a little bit at the Rose and Crown. So in the sauce, there's roasted mushrooms and an onion jam. And... the sauce or the gravy is infused with the red wine demi-glaze or something like that. So, okay. The sausages were tender and flavorful, but also mild compared to other types of sausages, like Spanish chorizo or something like that, so there wasn't anything spicy about the sausage. Mashed potatoes were smooth and creamy, and the addition of mushrooms and onions added a nice textural bit to the dish, so you get one big forkful of everything.
Yeah.
And it was wonderful.
It sounds great.
Jeremy ordered the shepherd's pie, so I'll let him.
I did. Very traditional on this trip.
We were traditional. I was channeling my inner Downton Abbey, and I had the shepherd's pie, which
somehow
is the lamb, the vegetables.
Huh? I could say somehow I knew Downton Abbey would come up in this conversation.
My goal is to put that in every podcast from here on out. But anyways, it has the peas, the mashed potatoes, the cheese, the cheddar cheese. And it was good, but I will say this. I mean,
it looks kind of
like Matt. It was a small dish. I mean, it was small, but it was filling.
For like $16.
Yeah, no, it's $18.99.
Oh,
so not definitely not worth $18.99. I will say that. But it was good, but it wasn't anything to like write home about. Derek and I, we just ate at an English pub when we were in San Francisco, and I had the shepherd's pie there, which was like half the price that it was there in Epcot, but it was still on the same level.
Yeah.
It wasn't any better than the one I had.
We are talking Disney, but I understand, yeah.
Yeah, so anyways, it was good. If you are into shepherd's pie, if you don't like to be adventurous, like that night, I'm usually can be an adventurous eater, but that night I wasn't feeling like being very adventurous. I think because I was more hungry than I was curious, so I just wanted something I knew I would like that would fill me up, and that definitely did its job. I also got a dessert, and I think Matt ate a piece of it. I had the sticky toffee pudding, which was recommended. And it was good. It's $5.49, and it was
also small.
It's like a little chocolate cake, and it has like a caramelized,
it's like a little
toffee
bundt cake.
Yeah, like a little bundt cake kind of thing with some toffee thing on it that makes it really sweet. It was good. My only complaint was you could tell that it was overcooked in parts of the cake, so it would be really like good moist cake, and then you get like a tough part, you know, and it didn't like ruin the dessert for me, but that's my only criticism of it.
Mm-hmm.
Not worth the price. If you're going to spend $5.50, walk to the French bakery and buy something there.
Yeah.
You know, instead of getting it.
Wait,
in the way of
French bakery's closed, right?
No,
or whatever they reopened that French place as
the ice cream.
They moved it and expanded it.
And expanded, still has a lot of the baked goods there.
Oh, my bad.
But yeah, the ice cream place is where the bakery was.
Right,
but the bakery
right.
just moved locations.
Gotcha. Yeah, now it's in the back of that store.
It lost all the charm, too, but that's another show.
Okay. Stay tuned.
The service at Rose and Crown was great. Our waitress was from Scotland.
Scotland. And we were there the night of the Scottish independent vote.
Uh-huh.
And she was not a monarchist, mm-hmm. which I about threw down with her on that because God save the Queen, but whatevs.
And she said no, not God save
the Queen. Do not save her.
do not save her, Lord. yeah, she was very helpful, nice, and the service was quick. But here, let me get into can I do this? Can I do a little bit pet peeve of Disney table service?
We need a special intro, like a Matt. Every time Matt wants to do a pet peeve.
A pet peeve. No. Here it is. I've noticed this about a lot of Disney table service restaurants is lately. I don't remember when this changed, but it feels like the majority of them are becoming glorified quick service restaurants. I don't know. You don't go to Disney World for like a nice, quiet, dimly lit dinner, but I feel like all the table services are now brightly lit. And it's all the tables, there's no covering on the tables, you have paper napkins, it just feels like you're sitting down for a quick service meal, but it comes to your table. So you can decide if it's a good or a bad thing that the food comes out in like 10 minutes, but if I'm going for a table service restaurant to sit down and relax, enjoy myself, I don't want the food coming out 10 minutes after I order it, which it did this night. It was like 10 or 15 minutes, it was very quick. Now, to her credit, she let us sit there as long as we wanted and encouraged us to stay till illumination. And then even after it was over, said, hang out as long as you want. So that was good. But I've just noticed that going around a lot of Disney table service restaurants, especially the newer ones.
When we checked in, we requested an outdoor seating for illuminations. And we had to wait an extra maybe 5 minutes at the most for that. So it wasn't a bad wait. So if you ever do eat at the Rose and Crown, I do suggest a later dinner. and ask for the outdoor seating for Illuminations, because there's two sections in the back of the restaurant on the lagoon. There's like an upper seating, which is like a patio or deck right off the back of the restaurant, and then there's a lower section that's like a patio underneath that. And we were on the upper section, so we were under the roof of the actual building, which was good because it actually started to rain while we were eating. And the lower tables are not covered, so they had umbrellas on the tables, like you'd see at, you know, a park or a beach or something. Those giant umbrellas.
Yeah, we know umbrellas.
Yeah. Wait, explain to me what this umbrella item looks like again.
I think they call them bumbershoots in England, right? Bumbershoots.
Maybe. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, and so the people who were eating on the lower level, they went ahead and opened their umbrellas because they were closed at the time. And so they wouldn't get wet, obviously. And I kind of thought, oh, man, because the umbrellas, then when they're open, it's right at your eye level if you're on that upper deck. And I thought, oh, man, we're going to have to try and see through the umbrellas to see Illuminations. But to Disney's credit, despite the pouring rain, they asked the, well, I should say they didn't ask. They made those people close those umbrellas and told them they could come up underneath the roof to watch Illuminations. So we were able to sit there with nothing blocking our view at all and enjoy Illuminations.
It was the best view of Illuminations I've ever had.
Wow.
I think so too. I used to stand in Canada up on the up the stairs right next to the store, and they put a tree right in my viewing spot, my preferred viewing spot for Illuminations. And I've tried other places. I think we did the bridge one time between the UK and France. And that was a good one, but this is definitely the best view for Illumination.
If you're really into that kind of thing, because you don't, the thing I missed, and the thing we can't review, obviously, is the atmosphere of the, except for Jeremy's at the beginning, the atmosphere of the inside of the restaurant, I wasn't able to see or sit, so it just felt like we were kind of sitting out on a, again, like an outdoor quick service place that cost $20, but it had a great view of Illumination.
Well, see,
so if you like that.
That's what I was going to say.
It right makes next sense. Door.
It makes sense that the outdoor viewing is some of the best you've ever had, because you do have to pay technically to have that viewing.
You say that, but right next to the restaurant, there is seating right on the waterfront for people that go to the little fish and chip stand right next door to the restaurant to go sit in. You don't need to go through Rose
and
Crown.
You got to get there at like 7 o'clock to be there for Illuminations, because everybody in their scooters is already there, sitting there waiting on it. Yeah,
that is true, but I'm just saying that is available.
Yeah. They send grandma down there to wait while everybody else does things, and then they come back.
Because she eats dinner at 5.
So. Right.
And listen, you may enjoy the atmosphere of the pub, and I may enjoy it if I go back expecting that. But I was going there for a sit-down meal, enjoying that, and enjoying talking with my brother and his friends and things. I wasn't there to sing the bar songs and to holler and to have a good time. So I think if I go back with that expectation, I would enjoy it.
Yeah.
But if I don't have that expectation and it's there, it's just really annoying. We really could not get out of Rose and Crown fast enough when we went 4 or 5 years ago, however long it was. And but this time I'll go back to Rose and Crown. Maybe. Right.
6.5 out of 10.
I'd say 7. I'm a generous guy. 7.
Okay.
All right. Well, that is the Rose and Crown. You know, when you love something as much as Matt, Jeremy, and I love the Disney park, sometimes you just have to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And you just have to thank the person who brought this wonderfulness into your life. And, of course, in this case, the person is the man himself, Walt Disney. So we wanted to just take a bit of time and thank Walt for some of the gifts he's given us, some of our favorite parts of his parks. So we're going to do a little segment we call Love Letters to Disney. So I'm going to read you one of my personal letters to Disney. Thank you, Walt, for the Spectro Magic Parade soundtrack. The splendor, the spectacle, the sparkling sensation. I love the way the trumpets and strings swell and soar, and how the music constantly makes me feel like I'm on an epic magic carpet ride. I love how whenever I hear it, I'm instantly taken back to nighttime on Main Street. I love how it so easily gets stuck in my head that I often sing it out loud. And I can actually hear people wondering why I'm singing about carousels of light and laughter. I love the way its main hook repeats over and over, and yet I don't get tired of it, unlike certain other electrical parades. Although it might have come to an end, Spectro Magic will forever live in my heart and in my iTunes. Thank you, Walt. Yes.
Yeah.
Shed a tear.
That is good.
Shed a tear. Spectro Magic, I love you.
Oh, you're going to get crucified for the Main Street thing. That's okay.
Why? Oh, the parade. I think
people like it. People like it.
I do too, but I mean the music, I'm sorry, it doesn't compare.
So, no, you're
Spectro
right.
Magic, I love you. Signed, Derek.
Mm.
And okay, au revoir. That was my best French. Goodbye.
Wee wee. Are we ready?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Walt, for the Bippity Boppity Boutique. Not only do you make little girls' dreams come true, but if I have to be around someone pitching a hissy fit, I'd prefer they are dressed like a mini Cinderella. Nothing says Disney magic like sweat stains and running cheap makeup. I love you, Walt. Signed, Jeremy.
Yes. So I said sarcasm in that one a little bit. Mine, for the record, was genuine.
Judge me if you will, but I'm not a parent, and I enjoy watching children. If they're going to have a meltdown, it is funny to
you
see.
You enjoy watching children. Like, that's good.
A little mini Princess Jasmine throwing a fit.
That's why you go to Disney World.
Stop. Tell me it's not funny when you see a chubby little girl dressed as Princess Jasmine with her glitter in her hair. You know
and
how
her
they do
Nikes.
That mess.
And she her got makeup. Her Nikes on.
Yeah.
And her Nikes on and the pit stains, and it's 5 p.m. in the afternoon, and she is hot and hungry and having a pitching a hissy fit.
And this is what we like, call a sweaty princess.
I just enjoy watching it from a distance, you know. And then the problem is usually they're sitting right next to me waiting for a parade and they're having their cow, you know, and that's karma. But
wait, you either enjoy it or you don't, Jeremy. What's the real answer here?
I enjoy it from a distance.
Oh, okay.
Enjoys the effects.
Yes. All right, Matt, what do you want to say to our dear friend Walt?
I would like to thank Walt for turkey legs. Because nothing sits better on the stomach on a hot Florida afternoon like a 2 1/3 pound. Nothing sits better on the stomach on a hot Florida afternoon like a 2 1/3 pound chunk of fatty turkey goodness. I'm especially appreciative for its porkiness. But it's not pork at all. It's turkey. And turkey is healthy. Like turkey burgers or turkey meatballs. This makes the turkey leg a light, refreshing 1,400-calorie mid-afternoon snack. Even now, I can almost taste the collagen greasing up my mouth like a grease trap at the local McDonald's. I love how the juices run down my hand and mingle with my sweat so I don't know where the turkey ends and my hand begins. And how for the rest of the day, my entire arm smells like a delicious Thanksgiving meal.
Mm.
Of all the grand and glorious visions Walt had for his beloved park, I thank him not most. That doesn't make any sense. Of all the grand and glorious visions Walt had for his beloved park, the turkey leg was certainly one of them.
Mm.
Thank you, Walt, for the meal between a meal, the deliciously oversized, the monumental, the elephantine turkey leg.
Yes. 2 1/3 pound for real?
2 1/3 pound. Now, that counts the bone and all that stuff, okay. Too, but, you know.
I gotta say, as gross
a lot of meat.
As a picture as you just painted for me, my mouth is watering.
I love a turkey leg. It just doesn't make I never want one when I'm there.
Yeah, oh, no. 95 degree humidity. And
nothing about those look appealing to me, because when people eat them, like you said, it is like grease and drool, mm-hmm. and turkey juice running down their chin, and like pieces falling into their lap, and
it's
and
like you snap your back in caveman days.
Yeah, and there's no like attractive way to eat one of those turkey legs. You know, you are just like, ar, ar, ar,
well, you know, if they sold it at a restaurant as a meal, I would order it. But they peddle it around on these things like it's a snack. I don't understand that.
Well, yeah. It is known my disdain for the turkey leg, and so I have some friends that for Christmas one year they bought me the turkey leg air freshener from the Magic Kingdom.
How about
needless
that?
To say,
delicious.
So like I have it in my office right here behind me, but it's still in its package.
I'm sure it smells like a Thanksgiving Day feast, and yeah, something like that.
Now, a sweaty princess eating a turkey leg, that is a dream come true.
There you go. Watching Spectro Magic. Oh, wait, you can't.
Also, the rumor that they are emu legs
really
is incorrect. Yeah, that's not true.
I've never heard that.
But let's pretend they are, though. That's just that's fun.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, stay tuned. When we come back, we're going to talk about Maelstrom.
Maelstrom.
And the studio backlot tour closing. So this week, two classic attractions in their respective parks closed. Disney announced to great fanfare that Maelstrom would be closing on October 5th, and in its place would become a Frozen attraction of some sort, that mega blockbuster film we all know and used to love. No, we still like it. We still like it. And and that this past Saturday, September 27th, the Studio Backlot Tour, which is not exactly what it used to be, but it's still there somehow, is closing in Disney's Hollywood Studios. So we just want to talk a little bit about whether or not the parks that those attractions were in are still moving in the right direction, and whether they are still they still have the same mission that they started with and things like that. So one of you, let's start with the Backlot Tour, since it closed first, and that was on Saturday. What do you think about that? Was it the right decision? Is it going to completely change what Disney's Hollywood Studios is all about? What do you think?
Well, that has already changed, and that's what's interesting about the question. Is it going to change the direction the park was originally moving in or planned for? Because Hollywood Studios and Epcot both obviously have changed from the original intent for both of them, and it has to. So, yeah, Backlot Tour certainly does go a bigger step, kind of one of the original staple attractions. It was kind of the big attraction.
Yeah, I mean, it was like hours long, right?
There were two parts. It was like 2 hours long, I thought.
Yeah, there were two parts and a break in between. And
Yeah.
Well, at the time, the park didn't have much else to offer, you know, so you went there for the studio tour. You didn't go there for Rock and Roller Coaster or Tower of Terror because those things didn't exist.
Yeah.
A great movie ride, Indiana Jones and Star Tours, I think, was it, except for that.
Okay. No, I don't think Star Tours was opening day. Star Tours was not an opening day attraction.
Maybe not. And Superstar Television or whatever it was then, it was something like that.
Okay.
It was certainly the landmark attraction.
Yeah, well, the original vision of the park was kind of paraphrased, but kind of to give you an inside look at the movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and a lot of the stuff that was there near opening day that's still there, like Indiana Jones, things like that. I feel like it does do that.
Mm-hmm.
But real quick, I want to read what Walt Disney World President Meg Crofton said in 2007 at the time when they announced that MGM would become Disney's Hollywood Studios.
Right.
It almost sounds like a rebranding because it says the new name reflects how the park has grown from representing the golden age of movies to a celebration of the new entertainment that today's Hollywood has to offer in music, television, movies, and theater. So in that sense, the Backlot Tour isn't necessarily needed unless you just kind of change what it is rather than, I don't know, like, what was the Backlot Tour? I know there was Residential Street with, like, facades of old TV shows.
Mm.
But now what? It's just you see Catastrophe
Originally,
Canyon.
The entrance, I was there the year that MGM Studios opened. That was my first year, and I think we went there. And I vaguely remember parts of it, like the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids special effects show with the big B and the blue screen. I remember that thing. And Catastrophe Canyon, of course, and Residential Street. But in doing some research, I didn't realize how large the whole thing was. The entrance used to be where the Magic of Disney Animation is now. And so that big entryway
right
there, that big arch to the animation courtyard, was the entrance to that attraction. And it was literally the entire back section of the park where you have Pixar Place and New York Street. That whole area was the Backlot Tour, including the Voyage of the Little Mermaid soundstage had something in it. The Toy Story Mania soundstage had something in it. The Soundstage 1 had something in it. And then, of course, the tram ride. So it was a ginormous attraction. Yeah.
The sad thing for me is I still think the Backlot Tour could be something appealing to people. Now, obviously, in its current state, it has slowly just died and died and died. And I think it really, the death of it all started back when they got rid of Residential Street and they put in that horrible stunt show. But that's, again, another topic for another day.
Yeah.
But to me, people still like to see things from movies. They like to see the behind the scenes of movies. They like to see how movies are made. I mean, when you buy a DVD or a Blu-ray, you get a 2-hour movie, but then you get 8 hours of bonus features. And I don't think that's by accident. I think that's because that's what people want. And so if you did a studio tour that was relevant, that had things from newer movies that kept updating, I mean, the last time I wrote it, more than half the props that you see were from movies from the 1980s,
yep,
the mid-90s. I mean, no one today cares about Pearl Harbor, the movie, not the event. No one cares about The Rock. I mean, you know, those kind of things haven't been relevant for 20 years. So I think the most recent big thing they put in there that people cared about was the Hannah Montana house from the Hannah Montana movie when that came out. And so, you know, you got to keep it updated, you got to keep it relevant,
yeah.
But it just kind of became easier to let it just die there.
I would say by the time it opened in 1989, it was already not the way that people didn't care about that kind of thing anymore, because where the whole tram idea came from, the tram tour came from Universal Studios Hollywood, who did it since the 30s and 40s through their studios. And so that kind of became synonymous with working studios. When they made a theme park, they had tram tour. So when Eisner wanted the theme park, he said, we got to have a tram tour. And so they did it. But when Universal Studios Florida opened in 1990, their slogan was already, it was not the working studio theme park thing. It was just a theme park, and their slogan was ride the movies. So by the time they already opened, the whole studio thing, I think, had already lost its appeal to people. And I really don't think,
well, honestly, makes sense too,
I can't imagine wanting to go on a 2-hour attraction.
Well, it makes sense when there was a bathroom break halfway through.
Oh, yeah.
It made sense as well because the studios originally were a working studio. I mean, you had actual productions for TV shows and things being made there. So, I mean, that aspect as well, that would be cool if you're there at the park that day and, oh, by the way, they're filming Adventures in Wonderland, or they're filming whatever that Hulk Hogan show was that filmed there at Disney World or whatever. You know, it'd be kind of neat to be able to see something in production there, but when's the last time they had a production there?
Even when they were doing that, they were kind of having to force it to happen so they could make it a working studio. It never just naturally, hey, let's go film it that place.
Yeah. And listen, I know I'm in the minority here, but to see movie props and stuff actually from the movies, that appeals to me. I would like to see those kind of things. But again, it has to be relevant movies. And the problem with the studio tour was it stopped being relevant 20 years ago.
Mm. Yeah. Well, let's talk about what they're replacing it with. They haven't really specifically mentioned ideas. Rumors are spreading about more Pixar and Toy Story Playland or whatever. But I know right now, like Maelstrom, it's being replaced temporarily, at least, by some more Frozen. That big ice skating rink, the Oaken Trading Post. I think they're moving that to that area to create more space. So it's like, okay, more Frozen there, great. But like that statement I read earlier, now it's a celebration of music, television, movies, and theater. But of course, now American Idol's closed too. And so what's going to happen to this park? Like, what do you think is in the works? What needs to be in the works?
Oh, you go ahead.
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
We should develop a signal, like we raise our hands or something.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. I think they're finally realizing that I think they're finally implementing the move away from the working studio,
mm-hmm.
that whole feel, which is awkward because the thing's called the studios. And so you see a lot of that awkwardness in places like Star Tours. Like when you used to go into the queue, they tried to make it like a working soundstage until you crossed rounded the corner. And see, now they fixed that, but the little stupid tree facades outside are still clearly fake trees, and I don't think people put the whole studio thing together anymore. So I think they're finally moving away from that, which is a good thing.
Yeah, the title of the park, notwithstanding, because you're right, it's not a studio anymore, I do think it just makes sense to move into a direction where you're just celebrating movies. I mean, it's listing music here, and other than Aerosmith's Rock and Roller Coaster starring Aerosmith or whatever, I don't really know where music comes into that. But celebrating movies, theater, and television, like, that just makes sense to me. A Pixar place would totally fit in that. You've got the Pirates of the Caribbean weird thing over there. That fits with that. Of course, the stunt shows, and maybe not so much Lights, Motors, Action, but I feel like if there's ever a park that could accept attractions that focus on characters, because people want characters, like when Epcot opened, there was this whole thing about why aren't there characters? Hollywood Studios is the place to do it, right?
Yep. I mean,
and Magic Kingdom, but besides that.
Well, talking about replacing the Backlot Tour, what would be best there? You know, there are the rumors going around about Star Tours Land, and there's some people that are completely sure that's going to happen. And I think it will to some degree. At least I think it would be beneficial to the studios. There's also the Pixar expansion, which would be nice. I was kind of against the idea of bringing a Cars Land to Hollywood Studios until I went to Cars Land. And after I saw how well done Cars Land is, that would be amazing to have in the studios. Maybe not the whole land, but if they brought the Radiator Springs Racers, they put in a Ratatouille restaurant, they put in another Pixar-themed attraction, you could have a really great Pixar land right there. And I think people would really enjoy that.
I think they just, I don't know. The direction of the whole park is weird to me nowadays, because there's no reason to even keep studios on it. I mean, Universal is doing the same thing with their studios. It's just basically rides about properties they own.
Yeah.
There's nothing really even movie-like about it, except the characters are in movies, but that's all of Disney World stuff, like even Fantasyland. If I can make a prediction about what they're doing,
do it.
I hope they're not doing Cars Land. If they do something like it, that would be fine. You know,
yes.
Doing it to the extent of that is great. I just don't want this, like, the same thing. It's like, oh, that's not big news to me. I either think they are doing a Pixar expansion, maybe Cars Land, or right now, a Star Wars expansion. I don't think they're doing both at the same time. Hmm. The current place where Toy Story Mania is, Toy Story Midway Mania, and Pixar Place and all that stuff, Soundstage 1 is the place where the Disney execs were recently with John Lasseter. And that's over there, not where Star Tours is, but right beside Toy Story Mania, Pixar Place. So it seems like they're doing something with that, obviously. If I could make a prediction, I'm going to say that they're going to expand the Pixar area, not a Cars Land, but expansion, maybe a ride of some sort over there. And then that's going to expand back to where some of the Backlot Tour entrance was. Because if you look at it, you got a lot of room between Soundstage 1, current Backlot Tour entrance, to do lots of stuff. Perfect place for an expansion. Then later, I think once they see how the Star Wars film goes over, they'll expand that in the Echo Lake, Indiana Jones area, and kind of keep it separated like that.
It does make sense to wait for the Star Wars movie so you can incorporate some of the most beloved characters from the new film and and settings, things like that.
No, see, I disagree. I think they're going to start with the Star Wars expansion first, because there's already buzz being generated about the new movie coming out. People are going to see it whether they like it or not. They're still going to see it. They're going to be excited about it. And I think Disney wants to be ahead of the eight ball and capitalize on this, because Disney has this problem where usually a movie comes out, everybody gets excited about it, but then they don't build on it until 2-3 years after it's already died down.
Mm.
And so,
well, my opinion on that is based on just the fact that the people were there looking at that area, right now. And I think that's our next topic. But you would think it would make sense to wait until you see how a movie goes over.
See, I think
in
so too.
The long run, before you do something with it.
If they build Star Wars Land now, they're just working off stuff they've had for 10, 13 years.
Yeah, but even if the new movie bombs, Star Wars is still relevant and popular. People are going to come to a Star Wars Land
expansion. I just don't think they're going to want to capitalize on it if it bombs. They'll be like, Star Tours is fine. Star Wars Weekends is fine. That's great. I think that's what they'll say. We'll see. Now, if Light Motors Action, whatever, that horrible atrocity of an attraction, if that closes, then we know something really big is going to happen. Yes. But right now, I think it's fairly small. Maybe a minor expansion to the Pixar place, maybe a new ride, playground, whatever, restaurant, something.
Well, I mean, it does need more stuff for kids. I mean, I personally won't ride any of those things, but if they did something like that, I would have to agree that it makes sense.
I never realized how bad the park was for children until I went there with a child. My mother has my stepsister, I guess now. She, at the time, was 5 years old, and we went to Hollywood Studios. And there really was nothing for her ride-wise. You know, there was the Little Mermaid, the Beauty and the Beast show. But the only thing she could ride, really, and enjoy was Toy Story Mania.
Right.
You know, other than that,
that,
you know, she wasn't interested in
3-hour lines.
Yeah, I mean, you know, she wasn't interested in Star Tours. She wasn't going to ride Tower of Terror or Rock and Roller Coaster. So other than that, I mean, great movie ride. She rode that, but she couldn't really care about that. So Toy Story Mania was it. So they do need some more child-friendly attractions ride-wise in that park.
I will say, with the closing of Studio Backlot Tour, I am kind of surprised that a Lights Motors Action closing didn't kind of immediately follow it. Because they're right there together. I just feel like it's got to be coming soon, especially now that American Idol's closing. But maybe they don't want to close a billion things at once, because then what's left?
Yeah. And listen, those kind of a stunt show thing, there is an appeal to a mass audience for that, but there's no repeat ability. I mean, once you see the show, you've seen it. Like, they don't change it up. It's always the same. And I can't imagine it's a cheap show to maintain.
I've seen it once, and that was enough for me.
None of us here are really car people, full disclosure.
And even if you are car people, it was just kind of, okay, they're loud and they're going real fast. We're done. That's it.
Yeah. Totally
30 minutes of loud buzzing. And
about 5 minutes of loud buzzing and then 25 minutes of some lady with a joystick trying to explain to you how cars run.
That's true. This is true.
And not to mention, it is hot in that stadium.
Some
fans.
Thank you, Paris, but no thank you.
Yes.
Yeah. Take it back to Paris. Okay,
let's move over to Epcot, to World Showcase, and talk a little bit about Maelstrom. What was the feel when you guys wrote it last week?
Okay, well, let's just talk about the Disney fan community for just a minute and the completely different reactions to these two announcements.
Yeah, you're so right.
Backlot Tour closes, everybody's like, well, it's time. Maelstrom closes and World War III breaks out. People are chaining themselves to the attraction with magic bands.
It's so effective with the magic bands, too.
But
they're
so
permanent.
It called every name in the book. I mean, people are mad.
I could be wrong, but I would say that's about 40% mad that Maelstrom's closing and about 60% mad about what it's being replaced with. And that is a Frozen attraction based on a movie in a fairy tale land called Arendelle that kind of resembles Norway.
That is the main thing I pointed out, and I guess that's the main thing people are upset about, was that World Showcase was to be authentic representations and demonstrations of culture and food and music from these places. Even the ghastly redo of El Rio del Tiempo with Donald Duck and Jose and whatever the other guy's name is.
Careful. Jeremy is going to beat you with the stick.
I am a three caballeros.
Well, that's terrific. But even that is fine because without going into the history of that movie and where those people came from, the whole point of that still feels like it's representing Mexico, a real place. They're there. Even if it's cheap, at least it's Mexico, you know?
And even though Panchito is the only Mexican character, by the way.
Who? Oh.
Panchito is the only Mexican character in the film. Jose is Brazilian, but anyways.
Well, they don't get their pavilion.
They actually clarify it in that movie, or those movies, or whatever. In Frozen, Norway is not mentioned a single time. Just Arendelle.
No. And that's the thing. They took characters, and they still kept the authenticity of the Mexican culture. And they clearly identify it as Mexico. It's not, you know, a fairy tale land, which Norway now is being completely shut out for a fairy tale land that's never identified.
And that's the way it was. That's the way it was announced too. I mean, when what's his face, Tom Staggs, announced it, those two things he made very clear. It will take you to Arendelle, and it will feature scenes and music from the movie.
It's
not just going to be a Frozen Norwegian adventure with Anna announced that it's going to be a Frozen ride in Arendelle.
And let's just say something else as well, since you brought up that announcement. One of my pet peeves about Disney is when they patronize, particularly the fan community, and when they inserted that Walt quote, that Walt Disney quote, that was just like smacking everyone in the face because, you know, that applies nowhere in this.
Go ahead and say the quote.
Oh, I don't have it written down.
It's something along the lines of Walt Disney, when he built Disneyland, said our parks will forever be changing.
No, they'll all be changing and growing.
And so they said, remember what Walt said, so that's why we're changing this. You can't get mad because remember, Walt said this. We didn't say it.
Mm-hmm.
And Walt is rolling around with his frozen discombobulated.
Right. I'll be honest about Maelstrom. It's not really the closing of the ride that bothers me, because I do think things should change. I mean, when we were at Disneyland recently, I noticed that like all of the shows are newer than the newest show in Disney World. Like, it's constantly changing, and that's nice to see. And so I don't blame them for wanting to put in something else for a ride that's as old as Maelstrom is, and it's kind of rickety. I mean, you know, I love it, it's charming, but it's old. And if they found something more Norway like that's better, I couldn't really argue with that.
I wouldn't even mind a Frozen overlay of some sort of Norwegian thing.
Okay, I can see that.
But I still wouldn't like it, but it would be better than just...
But part of me thinks this is going to completely change what World Showcase is all about. I know it's just one country, but still, you can't really say now it's a celebration of cultures when this is a fake culture.
And we just spent the last 20 minutes talking about a park that is struggling. I mean, Hollywood Studios need something, like we said, for little girls so bad that a Frozen ride that could be extremely well done, whether it be a dark ride or a boat ride or any kind of a ride, there would be so much better than invading the Epcot Pavilion. Because I remember when Elsa and Anna were just doing their meet and greet there. That pavilion was destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
The lines, the people, the strollers, it was out of control. And I have a feeling that's going to be exactly the same way it's going to be when this attraction opens.
Yeah. Well, this Frozen stuff that is at Hollywood Studios right now, I know they said just summer and they've extended it, but isn't it even still supposed to end at the holidays?
But I think it just closed. Oh. They just did their last parade.
Well, the sing-along, though, I think is going through December. But like... Well, now that park will be without Frozen, so why can't the attraction go there?
Elsa, she's going to be part of the lighting of the castle for the Christmas thing at the Magic Kingdom. The thing about Frozen that aggravates me, from a business standpoint, it's smart to capitalize in any way that you can on a success, that people are going to go and buy and spend money on anything Frozen with Olaf or Anna or Elsa or any of the rest of their little gang. So it's very smart to do that. But the thing they did at Hollywood Studios, I went and it's just... I mean, they put up some big screens that say Frozen. They've got, you know, kind of a ship-shod, put-together stage there in front of the thing. I just don't want the same thing to happen to a ride that could be good.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to take a year and we're going to just slap some Frozen stuff in there real quick, put the music in there, and people are going to love it. I just hope it's good.
I mean, if you build it, they will come, and like, they really, really will come, and I might have to avoid that country for a while, but just because you can doesn't mean you have to.
Mm.
Doesn't mean it makes the most sense.
Because of the popularity, I don't understand how they're going to do it.
Mm.
People-wise, putting where they're going to put the people. But we'll see.
I just am excited about Olaf's summer vacation taking over the ride in the Mexican pavilion, and then Olaf's oriental adventure when that takes over the Chinese, the China pavilion, and Olaf's Specken Sie Deutsch adventure in Germany. It's just going to be Olaf all over the World Showcase.
I personally cannot wait for that.
Olaf Illuminations.
That'd be terrific.
Well, on that note, I think we're out of time, so I'm going to wrap it up here and say thank you for listening, and we're trying to slowly get an online presence, so check us out at www.madchatters.net. Like us on Facebook if you get a chance. Be sure to leave a review on iTunes if you liked us, or if you didn't like us, let us know what you think, and we will see you next week. Say bye, guys.
Goodbye now.
Bye, guys.